Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the farm. I have a very special guest, one of my favorite authors, Peter Lavenda. Peter, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on.
Wonderful. Surely. It's an honor to have you. So I'm just going to jump right into the questions because I don't want to spend any time talking about myself. That's how we're on the show. So right off the bat, this is going to be like a few questions in one, but just hear me out, and I can repeat one if you like. But what would you say? And this, I'm just starting with the harder stuff, just to tell you that, and then we go into fun stuff. But what could you say to people who are kind of doubting the steps and the rollout for To the Stars, and people who are maybe expecting more vital information or had been promised such by Tom alone at some point? And, you know, how does collecting money to build an advanced craft sort of further the process of disclosure, if that's what he's going for? And if there's two major media companies, there's two major organizations, one is To the Stars and the other is the Gaia Sphere Being Alliance, Corey Good camp. And regardless of how preposterous Corey Good is in purport, you know, in contrast to Tom getting real people from the DIA or a Defense Department or whatever, both of these companies are trying to sell a lot of fiction. They're both putting out comics, fictional books that may contain kernels of truth, films, etc. So there's this identical model sort of between Tom and Corey Good. But I'm just wondering your thoughts on that. And then just the last part of that is, would you understand how people who have been passionate about this for years and have been doing this research for years might feel underwhelmed or might doubt some of the process of rollout on Tom's part?
Okay. I'll try to answer this sort of in the order you asked, but I'll probably jump around a little bit. The process that we've undertaken, I mean, I realize a lot of people were, and Tom and I discussed this at the very beginning of our relationship where To the Stars was concerned and writing the Secret Machines books and all of this. And I told Tom, I was very upfront with him, this was a couple of years ago when this started, I think in 2015 in January or December 2014, in that period. And I said to Tom, you know, you're going to get a lot of pushback from people who have invested time, money, energy, and their reputations in ufology, in the study of UFOs and allied phenomena like that. They're not going to like it. I mean, you're a rock star, and right away they're going to hold that against you. They could love what you do as a rock star, but you know, how dare you, you know, stick a toe into our part of the world. So there's going to be that, you know, pushback right away. Number two, because you have a certain amount of celebrity, they're going to hold that against you as well, because you have the celebrity in a completely different demographic. You didn't build it within the UFO community. Your celebrity came from outside. And that's going to be perceived as kind of a threat as well. We don't like it when, you know, actors become activists. You know, there's always that pushback from people. They don't want to see that. They want actors to remain actors, musicians to remain musicians. So when you cross over into another area, there's always going to be a lot of people who feel threatened by that. Now, all of that said, I'm not any kind of an official spokesperson for To the Stars. You have to understand that too. So I'm talking about this from my own perspective, from having worked on the projects. I'm still working on the projects, from my own angle, from my own in my own little end of what this is all about. So what I'm doing is I'm discussing it from my perspective, and my perspective is that I came into the UFO field indirectly as well. I came into it completely off the wall, because my interest in it was generated because of all the times I saw UFO personalities or UFO events involved in things that had nothing to do with UFOs. Like I was researching American history. I was researching everything from early American history all to the present day, the assassinations of the president and Bobby Kennedy, Martin Luther King, and on and on. And in the process of doing that, I kept coming across UFO people. You know, it was kind of strange. I would research cults. I would research maybe the Process Church or Charlie Manson or something, and then come across another UFO connection somehow. And this drew me into the study of it because of all of these, just these bizarre connections. So I came into the field also from outside. I'm not somebody who grew up within, you know, NICAP or MUFON or any of the organizations. I've never gone to, until recently, did I ever go to the conventions or anything like that. I approach the UFO phenomenon as an historical anomaly in a collection of historical anomalies. So I could sympathize that Tom was going to go through the same thing. And the only reason I really got involved in it, number one, I wrote Sinister Forces, which has an entire chapter devoted to ufology called Communion. But also I mentioned ufology throughout the book, throughout the three volumes, and particularly in association with the Kennedy assassination. So I was invited to give a speech in Amsterdam for the Secret Space Program, really based on this material, the historical material, Fred Crisman and Guy Bannister and all these personalities. And these were all people who were, you know, very prominent in their own way when UFO, the seminal UFO event, the 1947 year, the watershed year for, you know, all of the bizarre things, the Kenneth Arnold sightings and Roswell and all of that. Personalities who were involved at that time in 47, then later crop up during the Kennedy assassination as being suspects in the conspiracy. And that kind of thing blew my mind. And I think it blew the mind of a lot of other people too. So I'm saying all this by way of preamble that my interest in the field came from that respect, came from that end. And as I was researching Sinister Forces, I also got in contact with Whitley Strieber, who contacted me on the basis of my first book on Holy Alliance, which is about Nazis, which would seem to have nothing at all to do with UFOs on the face of it. But as I talk about it in Sinister Forces, there was a kind of bizarre possibility, a connection between Nazi scientists who came to the United States, to Randolph Air Force Base specifically, and, you know, Whitley Strieber growing up on the outskirts of Randolph, and, you know, possible connections there, so on and so forth. So my interest came from a completely different area. Tom's interest, I think, was more in really traditional ufology. He was fascinated by the idea of flying saucers and aliens and all the rest of it, and was absolutely certain there was something to it. So a lot of people pushed back against this because we're from outside. And yet Tom and I agreed, and I understood where Tom was coming from on this, which is why I signed on. Tom was saying, well, listen, we have to take a different approach to this. People are speculating a great deal. They're trying to get answers out of the government. They want disclosure. And disclosure, the way they understand it, should come from people in authority, people in the government. So let's just do a full court press against whoever we can find who's willing to talk to us and just see if we can get a reaction. Let's see if we can get any information at all. Let's try to impress them with our sincerity that we really do want to find things out. We're not interested in creating a kind of cottage industry here or something. We want to find out who knows what and what do they know and what can they tell us, understanding that there's going to be a security situation. There's going to be people who cannot violate their oaths, security clearances and that sort of thing. They have to protect that. So we have to tread carefully, but let's push where we can and see what happens. And let's really be aggressive and see, you know, what we can do. And since we're not part of the traditional UFO community, we won't be associated with one particular partisan kind of approach over another. I certainly wouldn't be myself. You know, my writings are, I think, clear about that. I'm not taking sides in this because I think we simply don't know enough. So he's not taking sides. We're all sitting there saying, let's just go at this, you know, completely fresh. But we're going on the assumption that the UFO phenomenon is real. We're not out to prove it. We think it's been proven. I feel the existence of this phenomenon has been proven 100 times over. Disclosure has been happening from the ground up, not from the top down, but we still would like to know what people in positions of authority, people who had access to data we don't have access to, what do they say? What are they willing to tell us? And we started this sort of long, laborious process. Tom did a lot of that work. I'm in the background doing the data research and trying to massage the data that we get, trying to figure out what we can use, what is likely, what is logical. And in the midst of all of this, we came up with the cargo cult concept, which is that not just religion in human civilization represents a cargo cult, but our science does as well. Everything about us as human beings, what started, jump-started civilization maybe 20,000 years ago or so, was a kind of cargo cult experience, like an initial traumatic experience that we as human beings had and that we're still, in a sense, reliving. And this approach got a lot of attention for some reason among the people and the organizations we were approaching, we were trying to get to talk to us. And they gradually began to open up and to discuss things and to sort of feel us out to see how legitimate we were, and particularly Tom. Tom was the, of course, the power, you know, behind all of this. He's the person who has the celebrity. He has the sort of the brand name recognition, if you will. And he's the person who was willing to commit a lot of resources to finding this out. So it looks different from the way the UFO community has approached this problem, I think. I look at a lot of the people and organizations and movements that have been out there. There's been a lot of, you know, entertainment value in this thing from the very beginning. I mean, a lot of the UFO community seems to be sort of entertainment based, as opposed to doing, you know, research to prove something one way or the other, or to analyze the UFO phenomenon from a scientific point of view, a cultural point of view, et cetera, et cetera. The emphasis seems to be, well, what does the government know? What are they hiding from us? That's one way to go about it, the sort of X-Files approach. And then there's the other approaches that you've alluded to, where people say all sorts of things that they really can't prove, but which sound pretty good or at least entertaining. So in the midst of doing all of this, I think there was a kind of an understanding. And again, I'm speaking for myself the way I understand this. And that is that entertainment is a vital part of all of this, because it engages both halves of the brain. What we're trying to do is not simply say this is what the UFO phenomenon is, because we're still understanding that. We're still in the process of understanding it. What we're trying to do is say you need to engage really both chambers. If you're using the old bicameral brain, you know, approach as a metaphor, to use both sides of the brain to understand the phenomenon, because using it only one side is not going to work. So we can present some material in a narrative form to make the context comprehensible. We need the context. It's very important to understand how people have experienced the phenomenon, the experiencers themselves, people who've been contacted. These are all narratives. These are all people telling their stories. And to a lot of people in the sciences or in academia, people telling their stories is not hard evidence. But for us, it enables us to approach the hard evidence, enables the people that we're trying to reach to understand better what we're doing. Not everybody has, you know, the training in the various sciences and cultures, and I certainly don't, and Tom doesn't. But we know that there are people who do have that kind of training. And sometimes their discussions can be very unwieldy if you don't have the benefit of the math and the scientific background and all the rest of it. I mean, the UFO community has been ridiculed by academia so many times by scientists, you know, because you believe six impossible things before breakfast, you know. So it's the, you know, people who are involved in the UFO community are considered gullible and credulous. And we're trying to get past that. We're trying to say, okay, there's the narrative structure, and that's important. And with a narrative, you can start to understand, you can get an emotional relationship with the material. But we're also going to give you the nonfiction. We're going to give you serious nonfiction where this phenomenon is concerned. And we're going to give you both at the same time. And it's not a question of making a Disneyland approach to the subject. We're not talking about, you know, Little Green Men and that sort of thing. But what we're trying to do is be a bit more serious with the fiction to provide, like I say, a narrative structure where we can plug in the nonfiction elements and then gradually get to the point where we're all speaking the same language about this phenomenon. Tom, when we're talking about money, and that's been one of the objections that's been raised, well, Tom's just trying to get our money. Tom doesn't need money to live or survive, right? Tom is a, you know, self-made guy. He's a very famous rock star. He doesn't need really the aggravation. All he needs to do is, you know, cut a few more albums and, you know, that's fine. What he's trying to do is bring this entire discipline, the entire study, down to the level where everybody has access to it. And yes, building the craft is one aspect of this entire project, but it's only one aspect. There's a lot more going on. And what we're trying to do is raise money to finance these extra projects that are part of the To the Stars Academy. So that's a whole different thing that's taking place. It's the books. I mean, I'm writing the nonfiction books. We have, of course, Andrew Hartley's writing the fictional Secret Machines Chasing Shadows novels, that trilogy. So we're doing that strictly on that basis. But then Tom has a much, you know, grander scheme of things. He has documentary films he wants to make and feature films. And of course, the involvement of the Lockheed Martin people or the gentleman that came to us from Skunk Works talking about, you know, designing an actual craft. This is the first time that we're making this, or anybody is making this type of, is providing this type of access to the people in general. We're not hiding behind the unnamed, you know, insiders who are giving us this information. Tom initially started that way, and because he had to not name them. We could not name the sources. We were protecting them. And then, of course, the whole Podesta thing happened, and that just threw a sort of a monkey wrench into the works for a while. But then we got everything back on track. And now, as you see, we've basically said we're working with this one, this one, this one, and this one. These are their credentials. These are their names. This is who they are. You know, here's photographs of them. These are the people we're working with now. So we're being transparent from that point of view. We're being open. We are trying to get people excited about this and to take ufology seriously for the first time in at least the 70 years, the almost 70 years that I've been around. But at least to take this seriously and to look at it as a discipline worthy of scientific study, a discipline worthy of a cultural approach as well, not just science, because science puts everything in a kind of box. We're trying to get outside of that. We're trying to show a lot of different boxes and how they're connected to each other. And I think science itself is getting closer and closer to that point of view as well, talking about consciousness, talking about neurobiology, talking about, you know, exobiology. We're getting close to the point where we're blending a lot of different disciplines together in order to reach this one truth. What is the phenomenon? And once we accept that it existed, that it still exists, what does that mean for everything we've done as human beings so far on this planet? What is the implication of that? You know, how has it affected us? How has the contact made us act in a certain way, behave in a certain way, follow certain types of sciences and arts in a certain direction? What has been the impact? Can we go back now and look at this in a more, you know, clear-headed way and realize that the phenomenon is an integral part of civilization, of our, in general, human civilization down the ages? So I've probably answered way much more than you wanted me to, but this is my reaction to your questions and to the questions we've been getting. We've been getting a lot. They're saying, you know, we don't trust you guys. We don't trust the guys who are giving disclosure. And my reaction always is, well, where did you think disclosure was going to come from? It was going to come from the government. It was going to come from the military. It was going to come from the intelligence community. These are the people you've always said were hiding something. Well, now we have guys who, you know, came from that background, came from that world, and we know who they are. Here's their background. Here's their curriculum vitae. You know, we know who they are, and they're telling us this is true. This is it. This is the beginning now of a kind of renaissance in this field. Hopefully it is.
I agree, and I hope so. And I appreciate the thoroughness of the answer. I guess that I still remain equally as confused, because we're talking about dealing with facts, and we're talking about getting the people's names and real people we can get information from. And then we're saying, well, this is kind of going to be spread throughout fiction, so you discern for yourself what might be fiction or fact. But then over here, we're providing fact. But then Tom goes on the Joe Rogan show, and everything he says that's incredible or jaw-dropping is sourced to someone that he can never name and never look in the eye or mention in any other way. So there's the idea that, yeah, there's Hal Puthoff and there's all these people with these giant credentials. They're just kind of sitting there so far, as far as I see it. And then you don't need money because you're a rock star and you got your life set and everything. So use that money to do the research, but you need money to build a spaceship. And then what is that going to do for the 70 years of trying to get the lid off of something? I mean, I realize we'd be demonstrating advanced propulsion or free energy or any of these things that Stephen Greer and Richard Dolan, you know, go on about would be the future or the way to save the planet or whatever. And that's all fine and good. But I see so much, I'm still thoroughly confused. When you gave the talk in Amsterdam, the secret space talk, I can align that with the Sinister Forces books and everything you do as part of a curriculum where I have facts, I have names, I have places, I have dates. Anything I want to check, I can go back and do such. And that's what I think of Peter Lavenda's work. But then Tom is sort of poo-pooing it every time he opens his mouth, at least for me. And every single time I show up completely open-minded. I go, you know, I used to listen to this guy's music. You know, I thought he was really cool when I was into skateboarding or whatever, but that's irrelevant now. We've all matured. He's in this field that I'm very passionate about, and I want him to succeed. I want to tune in to, you know, where he's got a bunch of people with credentials on a stage, and he's giving, showing a video or giving a talk that matters, that's full of facts, that will change things. But so far he's been just super confusing, and like I'm saying, when really pressed, okay, who said there was an alien body? Where was the crash? Who told you that? Oh, well, I met this dude in an airport, and you know, he faked a British accent and was wearing a trench coat, and I don't remember what his face looked like, and I'll never see him again. Well, okay, but that's what Corey Good's saying. He's taken away at night, and he meets all these wonderful Air Force military people and aliens, and we're supposed to believe this because he's sort of listing stuff about the military or about related credentials. Now, I know that having Hal Puthoff and having the other people from DIA, NSA, DOD, CIA, there is a huge, huge step compared to what we've done, you know, in 70 years. I see Stephen Greer's congressional hearing as a major step, and then I see Tom taking this next step. But like I'm saying, I can understand how people out there just are still filled with doubt because of the way he's presenting it, because of the way that you're there, you know, the whole mission is, like Corey Good, we're going to put stuff in comics, we're going to put stuff in fictional novels, we promise some of it's based off real stuff, we're really into giving you the credentials and the sources, but here we have to defend these people, so it's just going to be sprinkled throughout, you know, some Marvel comics, and you figure out what gods or spaceships are real and what aren't. And then over here, we're still trying to collect facts, and we have these big names, and we have an awesome website and everything, but where is information that we have been looking for all this time? Where is some solid stuff that will change things? Now, if that's still on the way, then, you know, forgive everything I'm saying, and I'm going to be patient, and I really hope that's coming down turnpike. But it's been months and months in books and presentations and talks and radio shows. And when you do this stuff, like with Whitley Strieber or whatever, you guys can go off on a tangent about facts or a case or whatever. And that's very, very interesting to me and aligns with everything else you do and all the work that I do. And then I watch Tom by himself try to, you know, be interviewed or talk to people or whatever. And I, like, it almost seems like he's trying to hold a facade together, or it is just about money. I mean, I heard somewhere that he's trying to pay back money from a failed hot dog company from the 90s with some of this money that is supposedly going to the spaceship or whatever. You know, please correct that immediately if that's if you know that to be false. But do you see what I'm saying? There's just a huge gap with what we desire, what we say we're doing, and what's actually there.
I appreciate what you've just said. I don't know anything about the hot dog company in it. I think it doesn't really make sense because of the way the To the Stars thing has been set up. It's a legal entity. You can't screw around like that. But anyway, that being said, you know, I'm pretty sure that's not true. But I can't speak authoritatively on that because this is really the first time I've heard of the hot dog company. But that aside, I understand everybody's doubts and they're worried about this thing, just everything that you've said. But think about this though for a second. Back in 2015, 2016, when Tom was talking about this and his secret, you know, contacts and everything else, everybody laughed at him because they said, well, you know, that's not possible. It's just a rock star. He's making stuff up. It's Tom. Look at Tom. I mean, that can't possibly be happening. I knew better because I knew who some of these people were, not all of them, but a lot of them. And in some cases, I met people and, you know, I knew this was all true. And it was painful because there was no way for him to go out and just talk about it. And then the Podesta stuff happened, right? And everybody knows about the WikiLeaks and all of that. And suddenly these names start getting dropped. And it's revealed that Tom actually was talking to people who were generals, you know, who were, you know, high up in the military industrial complex. And all of that came out. Oops, right? And then it was quiet again for, you know, a year or so, or longer than that, 2 years, maybe. And then in October, only in October, does this announcement happen. And, you know, Tom is there on the stage with, you know, Hal Puthoff and, you know, Chris Mellon and a few other people like that. And suddenly we see these names, and then October happens, and then nothing else happens after that. And people are saying, well, you know, there was nothing there. And then a few weeks ago, of course, then it hits the fan with the New York Times article, and then everybody starts talking about UFOs. And they're talking about UFOs for the first time like it's a real thing that we should not be making fun of. These are real people coming out, talking about real projects. And all of the people in the UFO community who were talking about the same kind of thing for years and years and years did not know that the Advanced Aerial Threat, you know, organization existed within the Pentagon, didn't know that Harry Reid had raised his $22 million to fund it, didn't know this existed even. And then the people who were involved in that come forward and they talk about it and they release the videos. They released two videos, and there's more stuff coming on the way. There's more stuff in the pipeline. It's kind of difficult to manage all of this because of all kinds of various legal considerations and everything else surrounding it, which is why it took so long for the New York Times article to come out, et cetera, et cetera. So there's all kinds of things behind it. If it was up to Tom, he would have, you know, spilled everything immediately. But the problem is we have other people to worry about, to consider. We have other irons in the fire where all this is concerned. And I think Tom is doing the best that he can, as quickly as he can, to put all of this out in front of people. Tom does not want to hold anything back. I don't want to hold anything back. If we're holding things back, it's because we make commitments to protect identities, to protect sources, but we are committed to getting as much of this out as possible. And I think we've shown our bona fides where this is concerned by putting out the names and the, you know, the backgrounds of all these people so far that we're able to talk about. Very important people who come out and said, yes, everybody, this is a fact. This is true. We have been studying this phenomenon. It's a genuine phenomenon. It is not swamp gas and it's not, you know, weather balloons. This is something else. It's a phenomenon that is outside of normal human experience. And we're showing you our cards, as many of the cards as we can show you. At this time, we're showing them to you more than you've ever seen before. And people are sitting back and saying, well, I want more. You know, there should be, you know, show me an alien body or something, or show me some of this stuff. Yeah, it would be great, you know, but we're doing the best that we can under the under these circumstances. These are government people who've come out and they're talking about this openly now for the first time. You know, the last time we had government people do this was like 1952 with those sightings over Washington, D.C., you know, and we had Sanford coming out there and talking about biblical analogies. I mean, this is, you know, way past that now. It's out there. It's in the mainstream media for the first time. And it's not tinfoil hat material anymore. You know, it may still be, according to some people. Some people are very dubious about it. And people have been trying to attack the stories and everything else. I've heard all of this. But it's a fact now. And this is much further than it's ever been done before. Much further than it's ever been in my lifetime. That's for sure. So let's enjoy the ride right now. We're not saying...
Oh, I'm sorry.
Okay, just one more thing. You brought up this fictional stuff. We're putting out fiction, and we're also putting out nonfiction, and we're putting out documentary films. This is not just we're gonna hide all the real secrets in a novel. It's for you to figure out. That's not what we're doing. We're saying we're providing the fiction as a narrative context to understand the emotional impact of this phenomenon, that it operates on more than one level of understanding. We're also putting out the nonfiction. I'm very hard at work on the nonfiction end of it, to present, you know, as much of a factual, you know, approach to this material as possible. And it's very difficult because if it was easy, if the scientists already knew what it was, well, then you wouldn't need it to the Stars Academy. What we need are these scientists to actually focus and concentrate and work on this. They can decode this phenomenon. We know they can. It's just a question of they've been afraid of getting involved with it because they would lose their tenure or they would lose grants. They would be on the outs with their universities or with the organizations they work for, the corporations. We're trying to create the safe space, if you will, for them to operate, for them to help us explain the phenomenon to everyone else. So that's what's involved here. It's a big undertaking. It's not just as simple as, well, here's a couple of documents, we'll declassify them, and this is going to say everything. That would never work. In the first place, nobody would believe it anyway. You would all say, well, this document was hoaxed, this is like MJ-12, this is like this is like that. We have to come out with something that's a lot more convincing, something that's going to make a lot more rational sense, and something that's going to have the sort of stamp of authenticity behind it, that when you see it, when you read it, or when you watch the documentaries, it's going to suddenly all make sense in a way that it never has before.
I really, really hope so. And I'm very excited to read, you know, your next nonfiction addition to the thing. I guess that a part of me, personally, I understand why you're doing this, but part of me is still confused as to, you know, we're finally getting to the facts, we're finally getting to the meat of the thing. After 7 years, we're moving to a place where we're going to be dealing with real information, real people with real credentials, yet we need to emotionally prepare you in the way that the government thought, you know, the religious and cultural preparation would be needed for a type of disclosure in a bunch of steps. I understand why you're doing that. It's still just kind of rings weird to me, but it's super weird that in the 48 hours that every news source that I can literally come up with or name became obsessed with UFOs and ran this footage that was maybe or maybe or maybe not from the DOD or the Pentagon, as far as they're saying now. And in that 48 hours that all this is happening, this is what Tom wanted to do. This is disclosure day one, and his name's been scrubbed from 90% of all of the news about it. There's, the disgruntled employee who was waiting to come out and complain about the ethics of the UFO situation in a barely funded program that we're just learning about related to Harry Reid. And then you have a pilot or two running around the news talking, but why not the person who's been preparing and working and possibly caused this disclosure? Why wasn't that person in the spotlight at all? And did it have to do with them being in the spotlight not making sense thus far, or somehow, sabotaging it accidentally by just being nervous or something? I mean, I'm pointing directly to the Joe Rogan show, but it's every time I see Tom up and speaking, even at the launch with the video that they played, that to me was like, is like a Disney Kodak presentation for just enjoying life in general. I have no idea why that was part of anything, but it's all a grand show as opposed to getting to the meat of any of it. Now, I do hear you. You can't just jump to the meat of it, and you're protecting these people, and you need to prepare a culture for these people to be safe and come out and speak. But it all seems just lopsided and still confusing to me. Corey Good and his whole organization, that again mirrors this with supposed fiction and nonfiction, is based around this mythology of the blue avians or blue bird alien people that he claims to talk to the most often, that got him involved in these secret space programs. Why am I telling you this? Because the aviary and the avians and the aviary in the 80s with Rick Doty and the Mirage Men fiasco, and now the avian supposed race of bird beings. How do we know that Tom is not being led by another Rick Doty? How do we know that this isn't the aviary, round two or three, if you want to count Dulce bases and, other extreme bizarre parts of the government manufactured disinformation narrative that puts people in a completely different emotional space if it's not true.
Well, I mean, in the first place, Doty was in the background for most of that. He was manipulating and spreading disinformation. My understanding of the Doty thing was that it was a quite deliberate disinformation campaign, right? In our case, we've got like a dozen people whose names and backgrounds are well known. There's no hiding behind the screen. It's not the Wizard of Oz. They're all out there, right in your face, saying this is what's going on. I mean, they're going to be, some of them are going to be appearing on various radio shows, and they've been on various television interviews recently on mainstream media. So you can ask yourself, is this like some sort of super manipulation that's going on? But you go down that path,
But
and then
Doty
there's
did all
absolutely
that. Not to cut you off, but Doty did the radio shows. He was on the TV. He was at the UFO conventions playing everybody's friend. There was a series of people in the aviary, like there was a series of people working with Tom.
It's not this. From my understanding, reading of the material and seeing the YouTubes and everything else, this is a completely different ballpark that we're playing in. It wasn't this one guy, Doty, running around trying to manipulate a situation. This is a whole bunch of people whose backgrounds we know, whose backgrounds can be backstopped. You can go and take a look and say, where do these people come from, really? You can look up their bios. You can look a lot of them up on Wikipedia. I mean, these are not people who are, they may have been secretly UFO people with UFO interests before. Maybe we didn't realize that they were involved in some branch or some aspect of ufology, but we do know what their backgrounds were in the sciences or in the military or intelligence, and it's right there. It's in your face. I mean, there's no one's running and hiding the way Doty eventually kind of had to do,
Well,
whenever he.
for the people on stage, there are people that Tom refers to every time he talks publicly that, like I was saying before, go back into the shadows. The people with the information he's actually sharing He can't share who they are or where they come from. So it's the same mystique, you know?
No,
And
no, well, it's,
there
yeah.
were a series of people with the aviary. Sorry.
The difference is, I think, and I'm not rushing to the defense of To the Stars. Like I say, I'm not an official spokesperson at all.
Sure.
I'm doing this from my own back, from my own, you know, contacts with what's going on. Tom initially talked that way and nobody believed him until WikiLeaks. And then he talked that way again and people stopped believing in him and they figured he was just backpedaling. And then there was that October presentation. Tom reveals as much as he can reveal when he's able to. He does have sources that he cannot name or cannot reveal, but will probably eventually be able to do so. Now, that's not a promise I can make for him, and that's not going to satisfy you or a lot of listeners. But if you just look at what has already been revealed and who these people are, the ones that are not associated publicly with this project, you go back there and look at that, at what they're saying and look at what their background is. You're talking about a brain trust of people who are now insisting that this phenomenon is real. I know everybody wants a lot more than that. We're, as I say, doing the best we can with what we have, but this is step one. This is day one, you could say, of disclosure, or at least of confirmation. I don't know if we need disclosure. We need confirmation of what everybody has experienced and seen and the evidence they've seen. So these are people who are at very high ranking positions in the very agencies that we've always been accusing of obfuscating, of lying about this, of spreading disinformation. And now they're coming out and saying, well, here we are. This is our background. I've had, you know, 20 years, 30 years, 40 years in the industry, and I'm coming out and talking to you about this. Cui bono? I mean, who benefits now by this? Doty was doing this on behalf of the Air Force, as far as we know, or as far as he tells us. Who are these people working for? They're from every walk of life. They're from all the various agencies, all the various military branches, you know, the military industrial complex, if you will, if you include Skunk Works. And not only that, but some of the other people who are on that list in the To the Stars Academy, they come from all different kinds of backgrounds. And they're all coming out there joining this group and saying, we're going to get to the bottom of this. I don't know what other strategy could we have taken? What other thing could we have done? What would have been the optimum way to handle this, do you think, if not this way? Not say anything and keep it to ourselves, or, you know, and just sort of dole it out piece by piece, or just do it the way we did, make a big splash, get in front of the mainstream media everywhere. You know, Tom does not have to be in front of this at this point when he's got people like Chris Mellon or Hal Putoff or any of the other names on that list who can go out there and talk about this. You're concerned about credibility. In the UFO community, some of these names are very well known, as you know. They have their own credibility, their own reputation, where their work is concerned. People like Jacques Vallée, for instance, who wrote the foreword to the Secret Machines book, to Secret Machines Gods. These are people who have a certain amount of reputation, and they're coming forward and saying these guys are on the right track. That's as best that we can do for you right now, considering that we just announced this in October, and we just had the articles come out in December, and it's only January.
I mean, they're certainly the correct people to do it. They certainly have the correct credentials and background. If, you know, if I were to just posit an answer to what could be done differently, it would just be the difference between we're all here and what the hell do you have to tell us? So we're all here, disclosure day one, you know, by To the Stars day 150, I was still being hit with ads to buy t-shirts and keychains and things, but I hadn't gotten any of the information. And then, you know, disclosure day 300, I'm still impressed. All these people are sitting around in the same place, are agreeing on the same task. But all I'm getting so far, collectively or independently looking at everything they're doing, is just we're trying to tell you the UFO thing is a real thing. Now, I know that's a huge step, but like, that there's days and weeks and months. Can something else happen that I guess my opinion is formed after the attempt at selling so many t-shirts and the fiction up front to start that narrative, like you're saying, and then I'm just kind of waiting. So it's, yeah, I understand that I'm just speaking to my own impatience right now, or whatever, but
No,
I do
we're
want to.
all impatient. I'm as impatient as anyone else because my reputation is also involved with this, right? So I built my own reputation over the years as being a very factually based, primary source oriented kind of guy who tries to go out and do the research directly, and find the documents and, go to the countries and talk to the people involved and, directly, engage. And this has always been my approach. So obviously, impatience is patience is a virtue, but impatience at this point is possibly a virtue as well. We do want the stuff to come out as quickly as possible. I just as quickly as anyone else. At the same time, because I've met some of these individuals and I do have a background in dealing with sometimes people in the military or people in the intelligence community in my career of collecting information, I know how hard it is to get these people to actually come out and lay everything on the line. They're nervous about how much they can say or not say, how much they can reveal that they have to figure out first if this is something that's classified or not classified, so on and so forth. There's all of these. Look what it took for Luis Elizondo to come out, right, and to talk about a program that no one knew existed. That was a big deal. It doesn't seem like a big deal to everybody, perhaps listening to the program. It's like, well, that's nice, but it was a big deal for Elizondo. I mean, somebody who had spent his career, doing this kind of stuff, doing very heavy intelligence work, to come out and say, okay, I'm going to talk about this now because, enough is enough. That is a big deal right there. That was a tremendous step. And it doesn't look that way to people in the UFO community who are sitting there thinking, well, maybe Elizondo is, part of the aviary, or he's a disinformation agent, or all this other stuff that they spin endlessly. Without having, facts to base it on, or having, a logical progression of thought where this is concerned. But for Elizondo to come out and do this was a big deal. And I can appreciate the enormity of that. And I think a lot of people don't. They don't really understand that that was a big deal. Or some of the other people who've come out who are now talking about this, risking their reputations, risking, a lot to come out and discuss this with us. It doesn't seem like a lot. Because everybody's been whispering about these people for a long time, or people like them for a long time. And they built this in their minds. And when it finally happens, it's like, well, yeah, we always knew about, Hal Puthoff or something, or we always knew about this. Well, not really. You didn't really know. You suspected, and you put two and two together, and sometimes you got three, and sometimes you got five. But now we're being open and we're talking, this is what, this is what we've got. This is what we've got to show you. So it, yeah, it doesn't seem like a big deal to people who've been brought up in the UFO community, but if you've been dealing with the military and the intelligence side of things, and with political movements and stuff overseas like I have for a long time, to me, I can appreciate this was a big deal. For these people to come out and to do this is pretty earth-shattering, and that's why the mainstream media decided they were going to cover it for the first time as a real story.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how they were prompted to do that. I assumed that it had something to do with the work you guys were doing. With Elizondo, I would need the same proof I would need with anyone else. Not that he had a position in government or intelligence agencies, but that he had hands-on relation or knowledge of UFOs. And can we really prove that with anybody? And I'm only putting them to the same test that I would a Rick Doty or a Richard Dolan or anyone that I'd be, taking information from. I guess I just need more proof, more stuff to come out of the individuals or the collective that matters besides inspirational statements and fiction, But anyway, I don't want to grill you the whole show on this thing, but I really do appreciate you going through all that, and I really do feel that I have a lot of listeners out there who wanted to ask you the same or similar things or were wondering stuff, and I really do try to listen to every single interview you do, every written interview you do, everyone in the organization, everyone related to the organization. I never want to ask anything redundant. I never want to make you guys repeat yourself. I'm sure on this particular topic, you know, you're going to have to repeat yourself just for everybody and their particular doubts. But thank you for entertaining that. I do really appreciate it. I'm sure my listeners do as well. So just jumping all the way to the other side of the universe right now. Are you familiar with D-Wave, the Canadian CERN quantum artificial intelligence run by Geordie Rose business going on?
I don't know what's going on recently. I've heard of it in the past, but I haven't paid any attention to it in the last few months.
Okay, well, I'll skip the question, but just to tell you, this guy, Geordie Rose, who sort of is the spokesman for D-Wave, Elon Musk made this statement that, you know, getting into quantum artificial intelligence is crossing this bridge into what he described as a direct quote as, you know, a magician trying to invoke, you know, some sort of entity. And Elon says that, you know, you draw the pentagram and you expect the thing to show up and you think you're going to have control of it. But like any horror movie, of course, you won't have control of whatever manifests in your space. And he said that's what quantum artificial intelligence is going to be like. And he was warning us. Geordie Rose gave these two different talks where he's saying that the intelligence that they're pulling through from this other dimension already sounds like science fiction, cares about us as much as we care about ants. In other words, not at all. And he makes the comparison that they'd be like the Lovecraftian old ones. And that they're, you know, really excited about making robots that can do anything better than a human can, and bringing these intelligences in from another dimension. And I thought you might find that interesting. You know, I was just going to ask you what you thought about that.
Well, I can address it if you like. It's not a concept that's unfamiliar to me, because, you know, we approach some of that material as well in the nonfiction end of things in the Secret Machines Project. I've addressed it actually in book one, the idea of the magician in the magic circle and what connection is there to the UFO phenomenon, for instance, and contacting other intelligences and that sort of thing. And I made that point in book one, and I'll be exploring that in a different way in book two. The idea that an alien intelligence would care about us as much as, you know, we care about ants, and that's an analogy that I've heard a number of times also in the past. This is one of the problems that we have sometimes in dealing with the UFO phenomenon in general, is that there's a tendency in some circles to think of an alien intelligence or intelligences as our brothers, you know, as our space brothers, right? The whole space brothers concept. And I know that Tom has been criticized for taking sort of darker view of it. And actually the truth is neither one or the other. I think that a lot of the people that talk to us from a military background, to a hammer, every problem is a nail, right?
Right, right.
So if you're a military person, you're only going to be thinking in terms of threat assessment. And if you cannot understand where the threat is coming from, if you don't understand its rationale, what its priorities are, what its targeting may involve, you're going to treat that as a really serious threat. You are going to take a view of it that is really militaristic. I mean, you're going to look at it as a potential enemy. That's the only way a military organization could behave, really. If it's not a threat, they're going to ignore it because it doesn't fall within their bailiwick, which is why sometimes a lot of the UFO sightings and everything else have not really been followed up if there was no actual threat demonstrated at the time, and if there was no idea that this could be a threat. The military has its hands full with terrorists and with, you know, other military things going on around the world, is looking at more immediate threats, somebody actually shooting at you. If the UFO is not actually shooting at you, that could still be a threat. It could be a serious threat, but there's nothing we can do about it right now. They're not shooting at us at the moment. So it's understanding what a threat is, that there can be a threat which is beyond something that shoots bullets at you, that the threat can be on a completely different level. The threat could be psychological. It could be neurological. It could be bacteriological. It could be all different kinds of things that we won't notice are happening until maybe it's too late. So there is a tendency among a lot of people to look at the UFO phenomenon as the source of a potential threat. And it would behoove us to think that way, if only to look at all possible angles of approaching the phenomenon to see if it is a threat and to take whatever steps that we can. We expect our military to protect us, right? We expect there to be a national security apparatus of some kind. So we're expecting the military to do that. That's fine for the military. But now the rest of us have to get engaged. And I think that's the whole emphasis behind this entire project, which is very ambitious, and that's to involve everybody in understanding and assessing what the UFO phenomenon is. Is it a threat? If so, in what way? Or maybe it's not a threat at all. Maybe it's something very beneficial. But we really need to be sure, and to be as sure as we possibly can. We don't trust people living in the next neighborhood, right?
Right.
Much less the next country. Why would we suddenly trust the quote-unquote space brothers, right? I mean, so we're hopeful, right? We're hopeful they're going to come down and save us from ourselves. But that may not be their first priority. So we have to think about this rationally. And that doesn't mean to be paranoid. That doesn't mean to insist that they are evil and demonic in nature. It means to be a magician in the old days, right? In terms of ceremonial magic, had a kind of binary attitude. There were angels and there were demons. But even the angels could be extremely dangerous, and the demons could be actually quite charming. So there's this idea that you have to be very careful and to use your powers of discernment, as they say, to figure out what is positive and what isn't. And the magical aspect, the thing that Elon Musk was writing about, is, you know, a very valid approach to take, not just to quantum intelligence, but to, you know, to something else, to whatever the UFO phenomenon is.
Sure.
And I'm grateful because you mentioned that really does help reinforce what I've been trying to say. And that is that the UFO phenomenon is much more than the machines flying in the sky. There is something else to this phenomenon. It's deeper, and it requires a different approach.
I'm so sorry to have to cut you off, but we're actually out of time. We're actually out of time. What was I going to say to just wrap that up? I do think you guys have all the right people in the right places, and you really are taking the right approach. And I you know, I really await where all this is going. Oh man, I had something cooler to say. But anyway, I gotta wrap up the show. No, it was my fault. Thank you so very much for being on. Hopefully I can have you back at some point. I'd love to have you back with Recluse from Vicep, because I think that he does work that just, you know, it's the bookends to all your great work. And it just, I think having both you guys on, we could, you know, really give the audience a curriculum, regardless of what we're talking, from counterintelligence
Absolutely.
All the way to the UFO phenomenon. Well, thank you again. And thanks everybody for listening, and have a good night, y'all. Peter?
Yes.
Yes. I think Joe's going to take us off into Skype land. Hold on one second. Or maybe we're just supposed to hang up.
Okay.
All right. Well, you have a good night, man. And I'll be in touch very soon. And thank you so much. It really was an honor. And I really appreciate you coming on.
No, my pleasure. Thanks a lot.
Shirley, have a good one.